Chapter 10. Alone in the apartment, I paced for several hours hoping what Chago said was wrong, that Frankie was not coming for me, and I wouldn't have to see him again. At 10, after checking and rechecking each noise and every car in the street, I turned out all the lights. Maybe Frankie would leave if he thought no one was home, or maybe the crew would convince him to grab some beers and chill somewhere. But deep down, I knew I was kidding myself. I ain't never seen him so angry, Chago's words echoed in my mind. I had to face Frankie one last time. It was the only way I'd be able to look at myself in the mirror, silence the angry voices in my head, and honor my fallen brother. By 11:30, the apartment was still quiet. I stretched out on my bed listening to the sound of each car engine outside, each siren racing off in the distance, each rustle of the restless mice in the walls. Only the red numbers on my alarm clock and the flickering candles under Weddle's picture kept the place from being as dark and quiet as the grave. As my eyes grew heavier, I started thinking Chago had managed to talk some sense into Frankie, told him to leave me alone, to let it all go. I was almost nodding off when I heard the step outside our apartment door creak strangely. If it were my mother, I'd hear keys jingling, the locks opening with a solid click. Not this time. First, someone tried to open the front door of our apartment. Of course, I had locked it, but Frankie knew how to break a lock just as fast as he could break a nose. There was a heavy thud, then a pop followed by a quick metallic snap. A second later, I heard the familiar groan of the door opening. My heart started pounding like a bass drum. My palms grew slick with sweat. I grabbed Widow's old bat and crept out of bed to the edge of the doorway, careful not to make a sound. The door was half open, so I hid myself behind it and peered through the tiny gap along the door frame. I could hear footsteps getting closer. From the sounds, I guessed at least 3 people had entered the apartment, maybe more. My worst fears were coming true. Frankie had brought the crew with him. My boys from back in the day, Jesus, Juni, and Chago, were now my enemies, breaking into my house in the middle of the night like thieves, allowing Frankie to push them too far. They paused for a second in our living room and whispered. In the silence, I could make out Chago whispering, "I don't like this. That's Widow's picture on the wall. This ain't right." "You scared, Holmes?" Frankie challenged. I knew his voice anywhere. "You back out now and the scariest thing you'll see is me." "I don't think anyone's here, Frankie." I recognized that voice too. It was Juni, a dude who usually spent Saturday nights smoking weed, not hunting friends. "Check the bedrooms," Frankie ordered. He was always getting people to do his dirty work. A year ago, he would have sent me to check the rooms, and I would have listened. No more. My hands were tingling. I needed to stop him somehow. Stop him before he stopped me. I prayed my plan would work. Our apartment was small. Only about 12 feet separated the front door from my room, and I could hear someone coming forward. I gripped the bat tight, feeling the sticky tape Weddle had put on it last spring. The floor outside my room groaned slightly as someone approached. Then I heard footsteps moving to my mother's room. Through the tiny crack in the door, I could see the back of a figure standing in the hallway looking at Widow's picture. I raised my bat. The person stood still for several seconds, took a deep breath, and pushed open my bedroom door. It was Chago. In the candlelight, I could see his eyes glistening and wide open with fear. He was staring right at me like he'd seen a ghost. If it was anyone else, I would have swung the bat, but instead, I raised my finger across my lips so he knew to keep his mouth shut. "No one's in here," whispered Jesus from my mother's room. "No one's in here either," answered Chago, looking right at me. I thought his whisper was too quick, too forced. He turned and headed back to the living room, leaving the door slightly open. I knew Frankie would break him if he found out about the lie. Chago knew it too. His forehead was covered in a thin layer of sweat that reflected dimly in the dark. "You sure the place is empty?" Frankie asked, frustration in his voice. I couldn't see what he was doing, but I could picture him scowling at Jesus and Juni, making sure he could trust them. "There ain't no one here. Let's get out of here before his mom comes back," Chago said. Someone struck a match then. Chago was smoking. I was sure of it. "Why are you in such a hurry, Holmes?" Frankie asked. I could hear the distrust in his voice. I knew what it meant. The apartment got dead quiet. Frankie was whispering, but he kept his voice low this time. I couldn't understand a word he said. "I told you he's not in there," Chago yelled suddenly from the living room. I bet he was trying to warn me. Then I heard footsteps rushing down the hallway. I knew I was in trouble. My arms were trembling with nervous energy. I said a silent prayer and peered through the crack in the door. In the flickering candlelight, I could make out half of Weddle's picture, but there was something unusual about it. A reflection of dim figures in the area under Weddle's face. The one in front was definitely Frankie. I could see his torso and head suspended in the air. As the reflections grew bigger, I saw something shimmer just for a second. Something metal. It was like Weddle was trying to protect me somehow. I stepped back and raised the bat, knowing where I had to aim. Frankie's right arm. He was just outside my door. Only a few feet separated us. All was quiet for a second. I crossed myself. Then chaos. The door smashed inward as Frankie kicked it with his steel-tipped boots, the same ones he used to cripple Caesar. I swung Widow's bat with all my might. It sliced through the air with a deep, hungry whoosh, sailing towards Frankie's outstretched arm. I saw the pistol in his hand glimmer for a split second as the bat came crushing down. Boom! The air exploded with a blinding flash and the thunderous crack of a gunshot. In the blast, quick as lightning strike, I saw the bat crumple Frankie's right arm, bending his trigger finger backwards like a snapped pipe. Then the room filled with the sour sulfur odor of gun smoke. My ears rang from the blast, but I still heard Frankie's screams, a sound that made the dark room seem like a torture chamber. "My arm!" he hollered, rolling on the floor at my feet. "I can't move it!" I turned on the light, the bat still in my hand. Frankie's gun was on the ground next to him. I kicked it away as he struggled to get up. A hole in the floor next to my bed showed the harmless path the bullet took. Chago, Juni, and Jesus were at the edge of the hallway. They looked stunned at the sight of Frankie holding his arm and me standing over him with the bat. Their world was suddenly turned upside down. "You know what you gotta do," Frankie grunted at them, wincing at the pain. "Do it!" They looked at me and didn't budge. My ties with them were just as deep as his. Deeper. We were all the same age. Kids grew up on the corner together. Frankie was the older one, a dude who used to push us around when we were little, someone who still pushed too much. "Yo, Holmes, you need to get to the hospital," Juni said to Frankie. "Your arm is looking bad." "Come on, let's get out of here," Chago said, reaching a hand down to Frankie. "No, he's not going anywhere," I said then. "You all can go, but me and Frankie got something to finish." Frankie turned to me, hatred in his eyes. I could see he was struggling with the pain. His arm was starting to turn blue. "You feeling brave with that bat in your hand, Holmes? Think you're going to finish me off just like that?" he hissed, spitting at me. "I always thought you'd be the one to challenge me, but you're too soft. You don't have it in you." Part of me wanted to finish it right there, the way it might happen on the street. A heavy swing of the bat, and I could end it all. His life. Mine. "Maybe you'd read it in the papers or hear it in the news. Another gang-related murder," the reporters would say, making me seem like a monster. "Don't do this, Martin. Come on, Holmes, just let him go," Chago said. "Why, so he can come back and finish what he came here to do?" I said. Chago shook his head. He didn't understand the lesson Weddle's death, Caesar's injury, and Mr. Mitchell's story taught me, that I had to break from the street before it broke me. "What you waiting for, Holmes? I ain't got all day," Frankie challenged, his useless broken arm swelling by the minute. "The police," I said, hearing the first siren in the distance. "I was going to call him, but in this neighborhood, your gunshot took care of that for me." Chago's eyes opened wide. Juni looked at me like I'd just spoken a strange language. "I told you he ratted us out. He's a snitch. You're dead, Martin, dead," Frankie said, spit frothing from his mouth. "No, I'm more alive than you'll ever know," I yelled back at him, smashing the bat into the doorframe near his shoulder. The crew took a step back like I had a disease they could catch. "I never ratted on any of you. Not after you crippled that kid at the party last year. Not after I found out that kid was Hector's brother and that's why he was shooting at us. Not after I figured out your stupid temper cost my brother his life and put another guy in a wheelchair. Not even after you put me in the hospital. No, Frankie, I never ratted you out. But I'm going to do it now. You're going down, Holmes, and Hector's going with you. Widow's going to have justice." Something new flickered in Frankie's eyes then. It flashed for a second, and I'll never forget it. Fear. He glanced over at Junie and Jesus, then at Chago.
Come on, Holmes, let's get out of here. I ain't waiting here for no cops.
He moved toward the hallway then when I raised the bat again, blocking his path.
You ain't going nowhere, Frankie, I warned. This is it. You're staying here with me.
Chago backed away from him, looked at Widow's picture and then at me, and nodded. Jesus and Junie shook their heads and started walking away.
You took it too far, Frankie. You always did, Chago said.
Later, Martin.
Later, Holmes,
I said as they walked out.
Frankie cursed, and in one swift motion tried to shove past me, but I jabbed the bat into his right arm, and he went down in agony.
I told you this ain't done, Frankie hissed as he heard the sirens approaching. It ain't never gonna be done between you and me, remember that.
No, it's done this time, Frankie, I said, looking at Widow's picture. It's finally done.
For months it had been a maze, but it all made sense now. I would tell Officer Ramirez what I saw at last summer's party. That would point the police to Caesar and show them why Hector was shooting at us. They'd finally have the case they'd need to bust him. I'd make sure of it.
Widow's killer would be off the streets, and Frankie would pay too, for crippling the kid and for coming after me with the gun. He might also have to answer to Hector's crew for what he did. No matter what, my mother and I finally had answers. We'd finally have peace.
Frankie didn't say anything when the police arrived, but I showed him the gun and the bullet hole in my floor. Told him I used the bat in self-defense. I told him the truth.
My mother and Officer Ramirez rushed in as the police took Frankie away. For hours, I told him what happened, made sure Ramirez heard every detail, watched him write it all down.
Maybe you'd have handled it differently. I don't know. But for me, there was no other way. If I didn't act, there'd probably be more dead kids right now, and I would have been one of them. I may still be one day, but not this day.
Thank God I didn't lose you tonight, my mother said over and over again after the police left.
No, Ma, you didn't lose me, I said, feeling my eyes burn as the sun began to rise.
The wounds from Weddle's death will never fully heal. The past will always haunt me. But there's a future, too. A life I need to live. For Weddle and for me. It's something I can't just toss away, not after all I've seen, felt, and lost.
I'm still here, I said to her, feeling something new stir in my chest, a glimmer of hope.
Thanks to Weddle, I'm still here.
Mr. Gates grunts at the last words of my story, still hanging in the air like a prayer.
Thanks to Weddle, I'm still here.
He clears his throat. Overhead, the lights of the auditorium are beaming down. The room is crowded but suddenly very quiet. Even the rows of students, parents, and teachers are silent.
Mr. Luna, Mr. Gates begins finally. I want to thank you for having the courage to explain your situation to us tonight. I appreciate your honesty.
This is a difficult decision.
Does anyone have anything else to add on this matter?
I hear people begin to mumble. Mr. Gates raises his eyebrows in surprise.
Yes, sir.
We do, says a familiar voice.
I turn back to see Mr. Mitchell. He's standing with Vicky, Eric, and a small group of other students. Some are wearing Blueford football jerseys, teammates of Steve's that I barely knew. I don't understand what's happening.
Mr. Gates, Mr. Mitchell says, I joined a number of my students in support of Martin Luna. We know this incident was not provoked by Martin. While he may not have handled it well, we feel...
That won't be necessary, Mr. Mitchell, but I applaud you and your students for coming forward, Mr. Gates says, closing his folder.
I brace myself for the words that are about to crash down on me like boulders.
In my time at this school, I have heard many stories from kids like yourself who are struggling in our school.
It seems each year the obstacles our young people face get worse, he says, shaking his head.
Now, Martin, I can see you are a sensitive and thoughtful young man, and I'm sorry for your loss and the troubles you've had to endure these months. However, I cannot tolerate the behavior you have shown since you've arrived at the school.
He pauses. The auditorium is silent for a second. I know his next words will knock me out of Blueford for good. I can barely breathe.
But given the details you've provided and what I've witnessed at this meeting tonight, I don't think expulsion is necessary at this point. You can remain here at Blueford High School, provided you meet weekly with the school psychologist, Dr. Boyd. However, if there is another incident this year, I will reverse my decision, understand, Martin? He's staring right at me, his blue eyes sharp and focused. I feel dizzy. Is it true what he just said? Is he serious? Yes, sir, I blurt out. Thank you, sir. Thank you. The group behind me begins to clap, and I feel my mother embrace me, sobbing with joy. Over her shoulder, I see the people who came to the hearing and stood up for me, snitches like Eric and Vicky, the bravest people I know. Thank you, I mouth the words to them, to Mr. Mitchell, and then to the sky for Weddle. I know he's up there somewhere watching, smiling down at me this very moment. Mr. Mitchell was right when he said life is about making choices. I finally made mine. I'm not perfect. I lose it sometimes, and I still have enemies at Blueford. But Weddle gave me a second chance. For him, my mother, and me. I'm going to take that chance and reach for the sky with it. That's my choice. I tell Weddle this as I look for him in the bright lights overhead. Oh my God, Martin, you did it, Vicky says as she runs over to me. I feel her hugging me as I squint up at the lights. You did it. Tears start rolling down my face, and I let them fall away.
This has been a Townsend Press production from the Blueford series of books, The Fallen, by Paul Langan and read by Juan Corillo. This audiobook features the music of Kenyon Winnington. For more information, visit our website at townsendpress.com.